That's the sound my dog Alfie makes when he wants to go for a walk. He's 8 now, and as a puppy, we had him vaccinated to protect against some of the more common diseases, such as canine distemper, leptospirosis, and parvovirus. Canine parvovirus is a highly infectious disease that is often fatal if untreated, killing thousands of dogs every year. The disease emerged in the 1970s and spread unchecked, causing a global epidemic in 1978 that lasted to 1979 when a vaccine was finally developed. While the epidemic was halted due to the development of the vaccine, outbreaks do still occur, so vaccinating your dogs when they're puppies is very important. I wanted to find out more about the emergence of parvovirus, so on this episode I'm talking to Dr. Colin Parrish, a veterinary virologist based in Cornell University in New York. Along with the emergence of parvovirus, we discuss the problems it can cause and what his lab are doing to tackle the disease.
Well, we started working on parvovirus in the early 1980s, in fact. You know, 1978 was when it emerged as a new virus in dogs. And so at the time, there'd been no disease equivalent to parvovirus in dogs. And then all of a sudden, within a year, every dog in the world got infected. It emerged as a new virus. It's clearly jumped from another animal. We thought for a while that it had jumped from a cat, possibly something like raccoons or something like that, but we haven't actually identified the original host. And then the virus is still around. If you have a dog these days, you know that you're vaccinated against parvovirus, and if you don't, then there's a reasonably good chance that the puppies will develop severe disease and possibly die. So what happens is people adopt the puppies, you know, they have it for like 3 weeks, and then suddenly it gets, you know, bloody diarrhea, and then many times it'll die. So it's definitely still a severe disease.
And the virus doesn't just infect dogs. It's been seen to infect giant pandas, otters, raccoons, mink, lions, tigers, cheetahs, and many other animals related to dogs and cats. What makes the virus even more dangerous is that it's incredibly contagious. It can transfer between animals extremely quickly.
It's what we call fecally orally transmitted, so it's shed in the feces of animals that are infected. It's very stable in the environment, and it spreads from dog to dog very efficiently, and it can be transferred. We think it gets transferred on people's shoes, for example, when they walk through, you know, feces from an infected dog, and then they get on a plane and they get off in another country and they've still got lots of live virus on them. It's a very stable virus. As far as we can tell, it will survive sometimes for months in the environment, yeah, under the right conditions. So.
Are there any other symptoms apart from bloody diarrhea?
That would be the main one you would see. In very young puppies, you may get it causes a cardiac disease. It actually infects the heart muscle. And in kittens, it can infect the brain. It can actually infect a part of the brain called the cerebellum. And so the animals get what's called cerebellar hyperplasia. And they get ataxia, they stagger around, they can't, you know, they have a hard time standing up and maintaining their balance. So but that's only when you get infected as a very young kitten or young puppies.
So what's the mortality rate like?
Well, for animals that show disease, the mortality rate is something like 30%. And there may be other animals that are infected which don't show clinical disease. And so, you know, if you have a puppy that comes down, even with, you know, aggressive treatment, the mortality can be quite high.
Is it one of those diseases that could stay dormant in the host without really showing any symptoms, or?
No, it's an acute infection. So if they get infected, they'll either develop disease within about a week, or they may recover, and eventually, in some cases.
So when was the virus discovered?
1978, and it emerged through it gained mutations that gave it the canine host range. So we know that there's basically two or three changes in the surface of the virus particle that allow it to infect dogs. And so we identified those mutations and mapped them a number of years ago.
So it emerged in the 70s, but how was it actually discovered to be a new disease?
It was discovered when it caused the global pandemic. So, you know, until then, you know, all of a sudden it was in Australia, it was in the United States, it was in Europe. You know, every dog in the world was infected, and, you know, lots of dead dogs, lots of disease. And so it was very obvious when it emerged. You know, it probably arose a couple of years before that, 1975, 76, but once it started to spread pandemically, then basically everyone recognized it at the same time. Within a few months, actually, yeah. So once it started spreading, it was around the world in probably 6 months at the most, yeah.
Canine parvovirus doesn't infect humans, but the worrying thing is we don't know why. One of the areas Dr. Paris's lab is investigating is understanding the host range of parvovirus and how the virus infects with the host cells.
Well, some of the research we're doing is looking at what it is that controls host range, and it turns out that a lot of the host range is controlled by its ability to bind the receptor, the ligand on the surface of cells that it uses to infect. The other part of our work is looking at what it does when it goes into other animals, and so we know that, for example, dog viruses can transfer to raccoons and cause disease, but when they do that, they generally mutate. They often have a couple of critical mutations that make them adapted to raccoons. And then there's another, they also can infect mink and they can infect other animals. And so when we see the virus in another animal, it almost always has a mutation or one or two mutations that seem to be critical and make it adapted to that virus. And then the other thing we're doing is looking at the receptor for the virus. So we know that the receptor is a protein on the surface of cells called the transferrin receptor. And so we're looking at how the virus interacts with that receptor to control it, you know, the ability to enter and infect cells. So.
Thanks to Dr. Paris for giving a fantastic overview of parvovirus. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not share it or reach out to us on our Twitter account, MicrobioSoc. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you later in the month with the next episode of our new series, Micronews.